Hello and welcome back to that haunted show. I hope we are keeping well. Today we're going to be keeping with... Hold on, my audio sounds terrible here. Today we're going to be keeping up with our scary theme. Because basically, I just looked on where I upload my podcast. My distributor can think of it. And yeah, we have literally had our busiest week ever. In fact, our busiest month, like, yeah, we're always on the rise and it goes up gradually, bit by bit, which is, yeah, like, really amazing, really good. But, oh my God, we have shot up and, yeah, that was the best month I think we've had in. Yeah, it kind of blew my mind a bit, so thank you all for listening and let's get on with it. I'm going to quickly look on the Apple Podcasts, see if we got any new reviews and ratings and all that, which, who knows, we might do. a lot of people said about the latest episode, the hiking horror stories, that quite a lot of people enjoyed it, and I mean, I thought it was pretty scary. Like, I was actually pretty proud of that. So I'm glad a lot of people enjoyed it. All right, so we still got 9 ratings. That's good. I mean, if you want to help out the show, you know what to do. Help us out by doing a review on Apple Podcasts or anyway, you listen to the podcast, actually. Anywhere would be really helpful. I don't know if you can leave a rating on Spotify or Amazon Music, but it would be very helpful. So if you could, that would be amazing. I'm trying to think of what other news we've got. So Monday night, we're going to be doing that haunted news show, which will be fun. Something exciting I've been looking forward to doing, as well as... The streams have been going well on Twitch, which are Wednesday and Friday night at 7 o'clock GMT time. So, wherever you are, it's 7 p.m. in the UK. It seems like not the majority, but I think about 35% or 40% of my listeners are in the UK, so that's pretty handy. But we're getting pretty big in Australia for some reason. Don't know why. But Australia seems to fucking be shooting up lately. From having, like, no views there to having loads, actually. So, yeah, that was quite interesting. Let's have a look, shall we? So, if we go locations. So, let's have a look at it, shall we? Yeah, 50% US. Oh, Jesus, we've dropped, actually. We're only 29% in the UK. Oh, we Canada and Australia are joined, so, hey. Big up to Canada and Australia. And that's pretty cool. We're huge in Walsall in England. Pretty huge in Columbus, Ohio. Atlanta, Georgia. Nice. Blackheath, England. Big up. Frankfurt. Here we go. We're fucking top notch. And then Sydney. New South Wales. Nice. Yeah, man. Denver, Colorado. Yo. So yeah, it's all going good. I'm fucking buzzing. Like, oh yeah, we're big in Honolulu. Sick. That's pretty cool. I look at these stats and it fucking cheers me up when I'm depressed. I've probably rambled on enough. This episode may be pretty long, so I should probably get on with it. So this episode, as you can probably tell from the title, is all horror stories from hospitals. And yeah, I should probably put a warning on these. Some of these are pretty scary, like the hiking episode. They do get a bit dark. I haven't read them all thoroughly. I kind of skim read them to make sure they're all good and not like the Valentine's episode. But we shall proceed, shall we? So this one is called A Night of Hell. And the source is creepypasta.fandom.com. My name is Kurt, and in the year 1939, I was 19 years old, and the head security guard at Sedgwick County Hospital in Wichita, Kansas. 1939 might seem like a long time ago to some of you youngsters out there, but believe me, it's not. And I remember it just like it was yesterday. The old county tuberculosis ward had just closed down, and we were in the middle of transporting patients to the temporary ward we had set up in our hospital. It was late fall, about 2 weeks before Thanksgiving, and the weather had started to turn foul. On that day, it was supposed to storm, and oh boy, storm it did. I was working the late shift, 6 p.m. to 6 a.m. in the emergency ward that night she came in. I knew right away something was amiss by the way they were bringing the old Packard. For you younger folk out there, there was a car company that made ambulances back then, into the bay, damn near at full speed. I stepped out into the bay to offer assistance bringing in the patient. The sky was dark with clouds, and the first few drops of rain from the storm to come was dropping lightly from the sky. The medic jumped out of the back of the wagon. His face was pale and drawn, glancing over at me as he mentioned for my assistance, so I joined him at the back of the wagon. "What we got tonight, Rick?" I asked, but arriving at the rear of the wagon. Rick was older than me, maybe 25 or 26, but he didn't look much older. He was wearing his white-on-white medic uniform with the large red crosses on the shoulders and the initials EMS embroidered under them. I can still remember the look of concern on his face when he spoke to me. "God damn, Kurt, you're not gonna believe this one." He pulled the gurney from the back of the wagon, and I set my eyes on her for the first time. She was a small lass, maybe 5'2 or 5'3, and a buck 20 at the most. Her red hair was dark and matted to her forehead. She appeared to be soaked from head to toe, much too wet for the light drizzle that was coming from the sky. She was strapped to the gurney with the wide leather straps that were usually reserved for larger patients that were having fits. I turned to Rick, about to ask what the hell was going on, when she suddenly lunged forward, breaking the strap on her left arm as if it was a shoestring. She swung her free hand at my face and open-palmed using her nails as if they were claws of some wild cat. I pulled back within mere moments of losing an eye. "Jesus Christ!" I shouted as I instinctively stepped back away from the flailing claw. "Jesus can't help you now. You're mine, you son of a bitch, you're mine," the woman growled at me. Her voice sounded hoarse and gravelly, as if it had been screaming for days and there were only a few good working chords left. Jack, who had been driving the wagon, stepped from behind me and grabbed her loose arm, trying to force it back into the side of the gurney. Jack was a young man about my age, and built a lot like me too, standing about 6 foot tall and weighing around 220 pounds. What I saw next is hard for me to believe to this day, even though I saw it with my own eyes. That little woman picked Jack up in all his mass with one arm and slung him to the ground as if he was nothing more than a sack of potatoes. I was stunned, overcome with fear and confusion, the rain hammering down now in a torrent as Rick was shouting for me to grab her fucking arm before she did more damage. But I could barely hear him over the beating of my own heart. I shook off the initial shock and grabbed hold of her free arm as she tried another swipe at my face. Using all of my 235 pounds, I tried to force her arm down to the side of the gurney so Rick could fasten another leather strap, but I felt like I was more holding onto the arm of a wild red berries than the arm of a diminutive patient that was lying on the gurney in front of me. After what seemed like an hour of struggling trying to gain control, Jack reappeared with several nurses and Dr. Hemeron. Apparently he had gotten wise and ran inside the hospital for more help after being tossed to the ground. Nurse Brown helped me hold the patient's free arm while Dr. H tried injecting into her arm, still restrained by the leather strap. Despite the combined weight of Nurse Brown and myself, the patient was still bucking and wildly thrashing back and forth, lifting me off my feet in several instances. The bucking made the injection difficult, and when Dr. H pulled the needle from the patient's arm, blood ran freely down her shoulder. "That should calm her down, but it may take a few moments before it kicks in. Let's get that arm restrained and strapped back down," Dr. H shouted over the incoherent shouts and obscenity that continually streamed from the patient. With Jack, Nurse Brown, Dr. H and myself, we managed to hold her free arm long enough for Rick to fasten another thick leather restraint around her wrist to the bottom of the gurney. We managed to move the patient into the hospital properly, getting her into room 1 being the closest to the ambulance bay doors, and all the while she bucked and spat and screamed. Sometimes just pure obscenity, sometimes in what sounded like a foreign language, but it never ceased. Several times she had to thrust her tongue out and it seems that it would tear from her mouth and fall to the floor. Meanwhile, the storm had reached a tempest. Lightning brought the windows to brilliant white flashes while thunder rocked the very walls of the building. "You will all roast in the fires of hell and be damned whores of Satan," echoed through the halls of the hospital as the patient continued her barrage of obscenities, blasphemies, and insane laughter. I was right in the room with her, trying my best to keep calm, though to be honest, I had never been so scared in all my life. I had been in the rooms of mentally ill, the suicidal, hell, even the homicidal in the course of my job, but nothing had ever bothered me half as much as that little woman strapped to the gurney with restraints designed for men 3 times her size. I couldn't explain it then, and I can't much explain it now, other than somewhere deep inside I knew. I knew I was in danger, and not just the physical sense. Through a small gap between the privacy curtain and the wall of the patient's door, I could see Dr. H talking to Jack. I knew Jack had to be giving Dr. H's notes on the patient, so I moved close so I could hear the conversation while remaining close enough to react in case she decided to get frisky again. I could barely make out what Jack was saying over the patient describing to me how I was being sodomized by demons upon my demise. The call originally was of someone drowning in the Arkansas River, Rick was saying. His voice trembled slightly as he retold the story. When we arrived, she was standing in the river up to her waist in what had to been freezing ass water, and that's when we noticed the child. Child? What child? Interrupted Dr. H. There was a child with her, sir. About 5, maybe 6 years old. She was dunking the child's head into the river over and over again. We asked her what the hell she was doing, and she yelled that she was baptizing her daughter in the name of Satan. My God, where's the child now? Down at the orphanage, sir. She was unharmed other than being cold to the bone. Rick finished his story with a shudder, and that shook his entire body. Rick and Jack left the hospital. Dr. H and I stayed with the patient. The doc looked troubled, and it had been over 30 minutes since the last injections were administered. And the patient was still thrashing, shouting blasphemies and more obscenities. Add to that the fierce storm raging outside and the flickering of the hospital lights that eerily seemed to sync with the pitch of the patient's screaming. And let me tell you, the shorts I was wearing that day were not fit to ever be used again. Finally, the doc came to a conclusion. Nurse Brown and myself held the patient by the shoulders, using all our weight to try and steady the patient as Dr. H gave another shot. He then grabbed up the patient's chart and wrote something hastily, and stood staring at what he had wrote, as if he was second-guessing himself. Finally, he resigned, let out a heavy sigh and tossed the chart onto the counter, where it landed. Dr. H turned to me and said, "She needs to be moved. Out back to the treatment center. We can't have her disturbing the other patients." His normally well-tanned face was nearly paper-white. I must have had a shocked look on my face as well, because he placed his hands on my shoulder and said, "I know, but under the circumstances." He looked at the patient again, who was still thrashing about. "Just do it, okay?" The treatment center Doc had referred to was an old brick-style one-story building that sat in the back of the hospital. It was originally used when the hospital had been the Kansas Sanitarium back in 1926 for less than conventional forms of medicine, like electroshock therapy and light baths. It was just an empty building now. The last time it was used to store rabbit food, when that swindler Raja convinced a bunch of people that rabbit fur coats were going to be the next big thing and turned the sanitarium into a damn rabbit farm. The doc left the room informing that he would send Brown back in, as well as another couple of other on-duty nurses to help transport the patient back to the treatment center. After he left, I went straight to the patient's chart. I just had to know what the doc had written that bothered him so badly. Oh, how I wish I hadn't looked. Though I guess now it wouldn't have changed things if I hadn't. I glanced through the chart and it was mostly blank as no identification or vitals had been obtained. Until I saw the diagnosis line. Written there was simply 3 words that sent a bolt of ice-cold fear down my spine. It simply said, "Possible demonic possession." Now we all had been thinking it, and murmuring had floated around the nurse's court since we brought the patient into the hospital. But to see it written by a respectable doctor, it just made it too real. And not for the last time that evening, I felt like I was going to run. Brown and several other duty nurses came into the room and I quickly sat the chart down. Brown had informed me that they had moved the other patients to the east hall of the ER so we could move the patient without exposing anyone else to harm. The plan worked well as we quickly moved through the hall, out the back side of the hospital and out into the storm. Lightning flickered through the sky, lighting the rear of the hospital to almost daylight illumination, while thunder blasted our ears, thankfully deafening us to the sounds of maniacal laughter and horrible blasphemy still pouring from the young woman's mouth. The center was dimly lit and smelled of rotting rabbit food and dung. Even though these items hadn't been in the area for almost a decade, we wheeled the patient into the speciality treatment rooms that thankfully had a thick wooden door that could close. Brown turned to me. "Dr. Hemmerman wants you to stay here with the patient. He has arranged for a counselor of some sorts to, you know, come and see her. You'll know when he gets here. You are to let him in and close the door and do not leave until he's finished. Understand?" I nodded, noticing the sudden panic rising from my stomach, threatening once again to make me bolt out of that building and head straight for home. It was an hour before anyone arrived at the treatment center, during which time the patient never ceased yelling obscenities and speaking in that strange language that made me feel sick inside when I heard it. When he arrived, I recognized him instantly as a Catholic priest. I couldn't believe it. I had known Dr. Hemmerman well before I'd worked for the hospital, and he never struck me as a religious type of man. I was shocked enough at his diagnosis, but to send a priest? I nodded towards the priest as he walked towards me and simply said, "Father." I've never been a religious man myself, so I wasn't sure if there was anything else I should say or not, so I stood there feeling uncomfortable about the whole situation. The priest finally spoke to me. "Son, what is happening tonight must never be spoken of. Dr. Hemmerman has told me that I could trust that of you. Is that so?" Yes, Father, but what?" That was as far as I got before he walked past me into the room and firmly shut the door. At first, everything was quiet for the first time that night. All I could hear was the tapping of rain against the metal roof of the center. The thunder seemed to have calmed as if the patient was still making noise, but it didn't penetrate through the thick wooden door. Then I heard it, barely audible at first, but it was definitely there. It was the sound of chanting. I guessed it to be Latin based on the knowledge of the Catholics that did their prayers in Latin. Soon after the chanting, I began to hear the patient again. Her high-pitched voice echoed inside the room before spilling out into the hall through the door, giving it an almost demonic tone than before. What she was saying, I could not tell you, for again it was in that strange language. But it wasn't the same language as the priest was chanting, whatever it was. The priest's voice rose, chanting louder and more intensely. The patient's voice rose to match, switching from the unknown language back to English. And the things she was saying, the blasphemies, to this day, I still cannot repeat, not even type. And they made me break into tears, and I found myself apologizing to God for even hearing such things. The lightning and thunder had come back with a vengeance, the strikes coming with such intensity and consistency, it was as if one continuous burst of electricity filled the air, till it felt as if I was going to die from the anxiety of the situation. Suddenly a scream shattered through the center, driving me to my knees. The scream was from nothing that ever walked this earth, and it shook me to my very core of my being. And then there was silence. I sat on my knees on the floor crying there for a good 3 minutes before I could regain enough composure to stand. The storm had seemed to have ended, but there was no thunder or sound of rain on the roof. There was no chanting, no sound from the patient. So I stood staring at the wooden door, wondering if I should open it and check, or just leave it alone. After about 5 minutes, the door finally opened. The priest stood in the doorway. His grey face looked like it had been moulded from wax. Blood dripped down his side. I think it was coming from his ear. Behind him lay the patient, a sight I'll remember until my death. Her skin had gone a pale green colour. Her jaw looked like it had been nearly torn from her face, leaving her mouth agape in a strange way that made me think something large and crawled its way out of her corpse. Her tongue lolled outside of her mouth, laying on her cheek, and her eyes had rolled into her head, leaving nothing showing but the whites. There wasn't any doubt that she was dead. I quit the hospital that night after swearing to Dr. H and the priest again that I would never speak of the incident. Promise a guess I have broken. Not that it matters. All the people who were there are either my age or dead by now. Nothing ever came up in any of the papers. Not that I expected anything like that to ever be reported. The hospital closed and was torn down in 1953, and there's nothing left but a broken sidewalk and a barren field. But that night did happen, and let me tell you, it changed my life. Bed 5, unknown source. I was sitting up, holding my head in my hands. I was in so much pain. The nurse said I'd passed out at school and been sent here. She literally said that. Not that I was sent to hospital, that I was sent here. The lights blinded me and I noticed the doctors walk through the door. Don't know how I knew it was a doctor. I guess only from the white coat he wore. He had no equipment and carried no clipboard, but I knew he had to be a doctor. I hoped he had some painkillers for my head. I hoped he'd come over to me, but instead, he merely led the boy from bed 1 out of the room. It was only about 3 hours later I realised something. I'd been sleeping for 2 hours, as advised by the nurse, but the boy still hadn't come back. Bed 1 was empty. I was confused by this, but there was no reason to ask. I felt like death and the nurse wasn't there. She was instead feeding the boy opposite me, like a baby. 4 more hours. It was dark now, around 10 p.m. It was cold even though the nurse insisted that the heating was on. The lights were still blinding, and then the doctor returned. He noticed a girl sitting in bed too, looking lightheaded and pale as snow. I could almost imagine the cold touch of her hand. The doctor made a signal, one that said, "Follow me." The girl rose to her feet beside him, obviously unstable, yet he didn't help her. He left that to the nurses as the ill girl was taken from the room. After 1 hour, I felt nerve and tapped the nurse next to me on her shoulder. "Excuse me, but where did that boy go?" I asked politely. "Sorry, patient confidentiality," she stated. She saw my disappointed face and leaned closer towards me. "Okay, but you can't tell the other nurses." I nodded as she began. "The boy in bed one, Taylor, he was incredibly ill. He's been here for days and not got better. The doctor decided he'd need a 6-hour-long operation. Unfortunately, Taylor died within the 4th hour. I sighed and looked away. "What about the girl in bed two?" The nurse sighed as if trying not to give out too much information, but began again anyway. "Jessie was admitted yesterday. She's just gone for a checkup." I nodded to show I'd understood and grabbed my head in pain. "Are you okay? Would you like some morphine?" I was about to decline when that headache hit again, and without questioning it, I nodded my head. I felt the scratch of a needle on the skin of my arm, and the immense pain as the needle felt like it had passed through my arm. I didn't know what the time was. I'd been asleep, apparently. The morphine had made me even more tired, and this late the nurses didn't seem surprised. I noticed that bed 3 was empty, but I had no strength to ask or get the nurses' attention. I felt weak, sleepy even. I recognized the doctor from before standing at the door, talking to a nurse before approaching bed 4. Then, like the others, the boy disappeared from the ward, and everything seemed cold. I was the only child here. All the nurses were wandering aimlessly. That was until a boy reached the door and was helped into bed 6. 4 hours. I reached out for the nurse, but she'd either ignored me or didn't notice. I was stronger than before, but I still felt pretty weak. I managed to sit up and notice bed 1 still empty, but the boy was dead. Bed 2, maybe the girl was discharged. What about 3 and 4? "Nurse!" I managed to call, and the same nurse who spoke to me earlier rushed to my side. "What happened to bed 3 and 4? The nurse sighed. 10 minutes. Wait 10 minutes, okay? I frowned at the nurse, shaking a little. "I just want to know what happened," I ordered. "Danielle needed a scan. Philip needed to be put down. Now don't talk to me until after 10 minutes. The nurse walked off in the storm, leaving me confused. Bed 1. Taylor died on the operating table. Bed 2. Jessie went for a checkup and never came back. Bed 3. Danielle went for a scan and still hadn't returned. Bed 4. Philip was put to sleep. Wait. It's illegal to put people to sleep, right? Then I sat up and realized. Then the doctor began walking to my bed, and I wanted to scream. I tried, but my voice was dead. I was weak, and I kicked and flailed, but I felt another immense pain in my shoulder, and soon fell into a blackout. Beeping was my company. I forced my eyes open to a woman in a mask. I felt her holding my hand. My other was locked in place on my side, even though there was nothing to hold it there. There were machines and tools all around, which scared me. There was a blinding light positioned to stare right back into my face. The woman's eyes were all I could see, a soft hazel colour, yet they had a green tint. "You're being so brave," the woman said. Where am I?" "Still here," the woman replied, and I could tell she was smiling beneath her mask.
"Why?"
"We're going to make you better. I only had a headache. I'm fine now." The woman laughed. "They all say that." I heard the door to my right open and then swing shut. "That's just the doctor. Don't move your head." I tried, but it was stuck just like my arm. I felt so confused. I wanted to pull away from her hand holding mine, but my hand was frozen in its position. The nurse kept staring directly at me. I don't want this. You don't have permission," I said quickly. My voice started shaking. The woman laughed again. "It doesn't work like that, sweetheart." "What are you going to do?" I said quickly. "First, we need to inject another dose of something. You'll feel a sharp scratch. but that's all. A sharp scratch, then way too much pain. The feel of liquid on my skin. I managed to pull my frozen hands in the fist. There was so much pain, yet no scream. "You lied," I whispered in pain. The nurse didn't reply, and suddenly there was a sound of a machine. Something horrible that made my eardrums want to burst. "What are you doing?" I said. "Don't worry, sweetheart. Just keep still and focus on me." "No, get off. I want to know what you're doing." "I promise you won't feel a thing." I wanted to scream, but something stopped me. The horrible sound matched the agonizing pain to follow. Something was digging deep into my forearm, and every time I moved slightly, agony filled me. I couldn't scream, I couldn't even cry. "What are you doing? Stop it, it hurts! What?" The pain was too much. I felt the limb detach. I felt liquid, and I felt my fingers itching, even though they were no longer mine. It hurt, my body ached with effort to move, which no matter how many times I tried. "Don't worry, part one is nearly over." I felt the same pain, but now just above my knee in my left leg. "Stop, what kind of hospital is this?" This isn't a hospital, silly," the nurse laughed, and I heard the doctor join in a little. Where am I?" "You're still here." I tilted my head back, and that did nothing to help the pain. I still wanted to scream, and I wanted them to stop. I stared up to the light in front of me, and finally, my voice released a petrified scream. "You're not here anymore," a whisper said. Then it hit me. Bed 1, Taylor died on the operating table. Bed 2, Jessie didn't get her checkup. Bed 4, Danielle never got a scan. Bed 4, Philip was put to sleep alright. I was in bed 5. Bed 6. The poor boy in bed 6, not much older than maybe 8. He was going to die. Die in a hospital where people are meant to be helped. But then again, this wasn't a hospital. Although it may look like one, it really isn't. I didn't see the signs quick enough, especially the most obvious one. The doctor wasn't wearing a white coat, he was wearing a lab coat. Lily stared up from bed 1 and to the dark ceiling. "Nurse?" A smiling nurse looked over. Lily frowned at her, happy mood, but continued nevertheless. "What happened to the other people?" "I'm sorry, patient confidentiality." "Please," Lily said. The woman sighed, leaned in with a secretive smirk. "Fine. But don't tell the other nurses." Lily nodded quickly before leaning in towards her. "The boy in bed 1 sadly died in an operation. The girl after that went for a checkup. Danielle in bed 3 got a scan. Philip had to be put down. Hannah was moved to a different ward." Lily looked across the room as the doctor called over the boy in bed 6. "Where's he going then?" The nurse was half frowning, half smiling. "Just wait 10 minutes, sweetheart." Hospital halls. Source: creepypasta.fandom.com. It was a stupid idea, but I just wanted to see what was inside and what it was all about. It was scheduled for demolition. It had been plenty of times before, but it always got delayed or cancelled. I just wanted to know what was behind all the rumours. No one else wanted to come with me, and I had to go alone. Well, I didn't really want to go by myself, but what was the worst I was going to find? Hobos, some crazed junkies, a feral dog. I figured I could probably handle anything, but I brought my knife anyway. The stories were just that, stories. There's no such thing as ghosts or, like, monsters. I decided to start out at midday, so I had plenty of time to explore the building when there was still daylight. Even so, I wasn't going to stay in there during night. There was something off about the hospital, and I had to know what. It was hard to get in, but I managed to find a broken window on the first floor of the west wing. The room inside was a huge mess. Things had been smashed and thrown around everywhere, and the bed was lying on the side. Sheets were strewn about, and a small table had fallen, and various medical utensils were scattered across the room. A scalpel was embedded in the far wall. I concluded that it had probably been some stupid kids messing around, thinking they were cool for destroying things in an abandoned hospital. It was darker than I'd first imagined. I cursed my poor memory, wishing I had remembered to bring a flashlight, just in case. I decided to try one of the light switches by the door on the left. Much to my relief and surprise, it actually worked. I didn't spend much time wondering why. The door next to the switches was hanging half off its hinges. Pushing out of the way, I was headed into the corridor. It was even darker and very little light at all. There was a strange smell and it was slightly disturbing, and I couldn't quite put my finger on what it was exactly. I felt my courage leaving. This place was definitely creepy. No, I told myself there's nothing scary here. If there is anything else, you can probably kill it. With that, I took in my surroundings. To my left, the north, there was an emergency exit, and to my right, the hallway continued into the building in complete darkness. I felt myself shudder as I looked down it. I asked myself if the emergency door still worked. Checking around in the dark, I could not find any switches nearby, and I didn't want to leave the comforting light of the first room. I was just about to head back when the lights in the corridor flickered on. It scared me half to death, so I decided the lights in the other room were somehow connected to the hallway lights, and there has been some sort of delay, I guess. I moved down the corridor and further into the hospital. I saw a few dark empty rooms on the way, a few creaks and a few little noises, but I was certain there was just the building expanding in the afternoon heat or something like that. What was strange was the corridor just went on like this for an impossibly long distance. I was sure I should have reached the end by now. I turned back to see how far I'd come. Some 6 doors down was the room I'd entered and the same emergency exit beyond it. That's when I'd had enough. I went back to the room, but it wasn't quite the same room. There was blood smeared all over the wall as if someone had painted it with their hands. The light seemed to have no source. I glanced around for a window, and there was none. I couldn't understand. The room had been there just a minute ago. I stumbled out of the room and heard a door further along the corridor slam shut. I slowly turned and looked behind me. Nothing there. Panic gripped me and I ran from the blood-drenched room, trying to find another way out of the hospital. I ran and got nowhere for a long time. After sprinting for what could have been minutes or hours, I stopped. Leaned against the wall and took a breath, and I managed to calm myself down finally. There must be some sort of reasonable explanation for this. Maybe took a turn without realizing, I thought to myself. Suddenly, there was a series of loud groans and creaks behind me. To my right, there was a new corridor. I walked over and investigated it. No more than 10 meters away was a spiral staircase. It occurred to me that spiral staircases aren't usually found in hospitals. But with all the other weird crap going on, I wasn't going to question it. I went over to check how stable it was. I shook the handrail. It seemed sturdy enough. The whole thing seemed to be made of some sort of black metal. I looked back at the corridor. I knew if I went back there, I would be trapped forever, and I didn't take a turn and forget about it. It was this place. The stairway was probably the most normal thing there. Nothing strange happened as I climbed up. It ended where I'd expected, and I walked off onto the second floor. It was another corridor almost exactly like the last one, only it went from west to east. Looking behind me, I saw the stairs had disappeared. God, I need to get out. There has to be a way, I thought. I searched all the rooms in the hopes that I could find some way to get out. Some of them were ruined with objects thrown everywhere. Some of them filled with blood and disturbing symbols. Some of them were just empty. Eventually, I came across a room with only a chair inside. It was standing upright in the center of the room. It was odd, but I thought it was not important. I continued my search for some sort of escape. As I was checking the next room, I heard something wooden scrape along the ground several meters away. I turned back and saw the chair just sitting there. Spooked, I hastened my inspection, putting distance between me and the chair. I had just finished 2 more rooms when I heard it again. It was closer this time. I stared at it and it backed away. I blinked. I heard the noise again. Behind me this time. There wasn't even a meter between me and it. I blinked again. It was almost pressed against my legs. What the fuck? I screamed at the chair, at the hospital, at everything. The chair vanished. I was alone again in the never-ending corridor. Let me the fuck out of here. The whole building was silent, and I waited for a second. Nothing happened. I went back to searching the rooms. I had an awful feeling that I'd made a huge mistake. It took me a while. It must have been hours before I worked it out. Slowly, the lights were dimming. Hour by hour, they grew more dull. Soon, there will be no light. Only me and whatever controlled this place, whatever liked to paint them with blood. Trapped forever in the hospital. The Nightmare in the Hospital. Source: creepypasta.fandom.com. Inside the hospital, about 2 years ago, along with 3 friends, A, B, and C, all girls, I went to a ruined hospital famous for hauntings. It was clear from the very moment we stepped into the building that there was something very wrong with this place. Since the cold air permeated inside, despite it being a hot summer's day, I felt the goosebumps prickle my skin. For a while, we kept walking around, going from floor to floor, until we reached the inpatient ward. There was a nursing station on the same floor, and as soon as my friend A saw it, she remarked, I think I just saw someone there. And that was the beginning of it all. We began to feel scared, but we had come to test our courage, and none of us felt like turning back to get home yet. We decided to divide up into twos and continued with the exploration. I paired up with A, and we chose to explore around the nursing station. We were just messing around with the stuff when A, looking pale and shaking, tapped me on the shoulder and said, I saw a shadow following B, just as it went into one of the rooms at the end of the corridor. And immediately after that, she asked me, did you hurt your shoulder? Puzzled, I looked over my right shoulder, and some muddy water was smeared all over my white t-shirt. Because it was one of my favourite t-shirts, I got annoyed and answered A in a sharp tone. Hey, did you do this when you tapped me on the shoulder just now? A looked surprised and said, what? I never tapped you on the shoulder. I got scared and shouted angrily at A, saying, stop putting my leg at a time like this. But A answered straight-faced, what are you talking about? I swear I never touched you. Beginning to feel scared for real, I suggested that we call B and C and quit the game and go home. A too seemed scared and said even going anywhere near the room into which B and C had disappeared was out of question, and so we figured we would just call out their names from where we stood. But no matter how many times we called their names, we didn't get any answers back. I was also reluctant to go near the place after all, from what I heard about A and the shadow following B. Also, my right shoulder felt strangely heavy and painful. Then A asked me, shall we try a mobile? She tried calling B. A, a moment later, heard a ringing tone coming from not the corridor where B was supposed to be, but from the corridor opposite of it. It caught us totally off guard, and that alone was bizarre enough, but to our horror, the person who answered the call was a stranger, and unmistakably a man. I heard A start pleading into the phone, asking again and again to let her talk to B. In the end, A gave up pleading and hung up. She said to me, maybe we should just go home by ourselves. It was then that A told me about the strange man who had just answered her. We were almost out of our wits and we rushed down the stairs at full speed. Once we were safely out of the hospital and back inside the car again, we began to feel more relaxed, and I said to A, do you think we should call C? And at this time I tried to call C's mobile. Immediately I heard C's voice at the end of the line. Hey, where's B? She just disappeared. Are you guys together? Don't tell me I'm the only one left behind. No way. She sounded unexpectedly cheerful and we breathed a sigh of relief. We told her to get out of the building and come to us as soon as she could. And then we tried calling B again, but there was still no answer. We pulled her car up in front of the hospital gate and waited for C. Sometime later, C appeared, walking unsteadily on her feet. I looked everywhere, but there's no sign of B. I tried her mobile, but she wouldn't pick up. I think something's up. What should we do? C spoke excitedly as she came closer to the car. We got her into the car and she told us what had happened to them in the hospital. According to C, just as the pair entered one of the rooms at the end of the corridor, B somehow started poking at C's back repeatedly, forcing her to look back over her shoulder. But when C turned around, B had already disappeared. C guessed that B lost her nerve and never gone back to where A and I were. And after receiving our call, C started looking for B on her own. She then heard a man's voice from the lavatory, and being a brave girl, she opened and checked every cubicle in there, but could find no one. She kept yelling B's name, but got no answer. So she decided to come out, not knowing what else to do. We were discussing about what steps we might take next when we saw B come dashing towards the car, wailing. It was such a relief, and we opened the door to let her in, but she wouldn't get in, only stood there crying and raving. Just what were you thinking? All of you ignoring me like that. Do you know how many times I called you, and you were planning to go home without me? Having shouted thus, she suddenly fell down on the spot. We were in a total panic and called the ambulance. B was carried to the hospital, where she died of a stroke. They said it was too late, but it seemed strange considering that she was only 26 and that she was treated immediately after she had fallen. The paramedics also asked me what happened to my shoulder. That made me examine my right shoulder again. Then I realized what I thought was dirty water was actually some sort of darkened blood. And I had also noticed that C's back was covered in numerous similarly bloody handprints. About a year and a half after the incident, C died of leukemia. And still a half year passed before A2 died in a car accident. Now, I'm the only one who's still alive. I just had a stroke this May, which left me paralysed on my right side, and I'm still in the hospital for rehabilitation, but my mind is at rest. Before I was admitted into the hospital, I was nearly driven mad with fear, but I feel strangely at ease now that I'm actually inside the hospital. I wonder if hospitals are protected by some unseen force. It's very strange. I no longer have to be plagued by those nightmares I used to have when I was at home. I'm no longer tormented by the shadow I used to see when I looked in the mirror. Now, even the idea of staying in the hospital forever seems like an appealing one to me. I feel sorry for the other three, but I think I will survive. Dude, that was actually pretty good. I do have one more story, but it is... Jesus Christ, I'm just looking at it now. It is probably the longest one. Oh my god. Yeah, man. I'm still scrolling down the story. Yeah, it's definitely way too long. It's probably like all of them together. And I don't think we can do this for another 30 minutes. Jesus Christ. That is Hospital Horror Stories. I hope you've enjoyed these stories. They have been definitely creepy. Especially since that last the kind of creepy horror story we had from the hiking horrors. Since everyone said they liked them, I've kind of gone for a more serious tone, more spooky, more narration, because, I don't know, I kind of want to do a bit more narration work, because, I don't know, man, like, I love to get into voice acting, do it in more of a professional manner instead of me just rambling into a podcast, into this mic, just for the show, because I feel that this is unprofessional. I just ramble about anything. I find some scary stories and read them out, but to actually do this in a professional manner, I don't know, man. It seems like pretty awesome to me. And the fact that I love reading, I love horror, and it just seems like a no-brainer to me. It's like my life's calling without getting all soppy and emotional. It's what I need to do. I am really enjoying these scarier, darker stories. They're actually all creepypastas, so... Yeah, if you guys like them, I'll definitely carry on with some. I might break it up and do some easier, more light-hearted ones next, but I'll put a poll on the Instagram and we'll see what you guys want to hear. If you want to hear more scary ones, I'll do more scary ones. If you don't, whatever. Whatever floats your boat, dude. And like always, I've just got to say thank you again for helping out the show, doing everything that you do, listening, streaming, downloading, doing all of that, because, yeah, you guys have really blown it up, and, I can't say thank you enough. There's so much I want to do with the show. It's just finding time to actually do it, and money and resources and all that. So yeah, it's great to know I've got so much support from everyone. Thank you all again. If you do want to help out the show on the Instagram, there is a link tree which can take you to my website if you want to listen to the episodes. It can take you to my Twitch channel, which we're live Wednesdays and Fridays. We're going to go live on Instagram every Monday. Also, there is... what else is there? There's my Buy Me a Coffee page, if you want to buy me a coffee. I guess that's pretty self-explanatory. Which is pretty cool. Like, yeah, there's plenty of things to do. But, yeah, definitely a review is the best thing you can do. And I know I hate pleading for it, but... It definitely is. So I hope you have a great spooky Sunday. And as always, stay safe, stay spooky, and good night.